Welcome back, everybody, to In the Loop. What is up, everybody? My name is Michael Burpo. Thanks again for listening to In the Loop. This week, I've got on Stuart Blessman, the digital marketing director at Punchmark, and we're talking all about the marketing funnel. The marketing funnel, in case you're not aware, it looks like a funnel. And at the top, you have the less refined aspects of the marketing experience. So that's like awareness. And then it moves down and you're going to refine your prospects until eventually you lead to conversion. So the steps are awareness, consideration, conversion. And we talk a little bit less about the last step, which is loyalty. But those first three are kind of what we end up focusing on. We give a lot of examples of how Punchmark actually uses the marketing funnel and the stages that we see it as, and also the role that In the Loop plays for that, and also how you might be able to identify problems in your own marketing funnel and what might be contributing to them and how you might be able to start resolving them. It's a really fun talk. Hope you stick around and enjoy the whole thing, and leave us a review if you do. Bye. This episode is brought to you by Punchmark, the jewelry industry's favorite website platform. Whether you're looking for better e-commerce performance, business growth, or campaigns that drive traffic and sales, Punchmark's website and marketing services were made just for you. It's never too late to transform your business with a user-friendly, point-of-sale integrated website platform designed for growth and results. Sign up for your free demo today at punchmark.com. While you're enjoying this week's episode, take a moment and leave us a star rating on the Spotify mobile app. Or if you're on Apple Podcasts, leave us a star rating and a review. It's the best way to help us grow and to show that you're really enjoying the show. Thanks.
Hey everyone, this is Jason, Director of Education here at Punchmark. Just wanted to remind you that our client workshop is coming up April 23rd to the 25th. We'll be covering great topics such as site manager, digital marketing, e-commerce. You also get the opportunity to meet the Punchmark team and also meet other Punchmark users. You'll also be able to hear from great partners that we have, such as ClientBook, The Edge, Edge Retail Academy, Inox, Classic Grown Diamonds, and National Rarities. We'll also put in a little fun as well. So we'd love for you to join us for a cocktail hour after day one and dinner after day two. Hope to see everyone there.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm joined by Stuart Blessman, Director of Digital Marketing at Punchmark. How are you doing today, Stu?
Doing pretty good. How are you doing, Mike?
Doing all right. We're going to be talking about the funnel, which is the marketing funnel. Just like the name would suggest, it's shaped like a funnel, wide at the top, skinnier at the bottom, and hopefully dollars come out the bottom and leads or prospects go in through the top. And we're going to kind of break down not just how you guys can identify your stages of your marketing funnel, but also we're going to give examples of how Punchmark uses it. Punchmark, a company that we're a part of. Do you know what's funny? Just side moment. You know what's funny, Stuart? Did you know that a lot of people don't know that we work with Punchmark and that In the Loop is just like this different entity and that Punchmark actually sponsors In the Loop, which I think is hilarious.
Oh, yeah. We treat you like a full marketing client and everything.
Yeah, it's true. But it's so funny that like people will come up to Ross at the shows and be like, hey, yeah, I heard you on Punchmark. It's cool that you guys are sponsoring that. And Ross is like, you know, that's our podcast, right? And they're like, oh, no, I didn't know that you guys did that. I'm like, what the heck? So I'm doing something wrong at some point and not telling it. But I try to drop it in as examples. Anyways, back to the funnel. Stuart, can you explain like just an overview of what the marketing funnel is and kind of like what the essential stages are as they move down?
Sure. So your traditional marketing funnel is something that has been in the business world for 50, 70, maybe 100 years, if not, you know, all of eternity. It is your traditional funnel or like an upside down pyramid. At the very top of it is awareness. Then you move down into consideration, and followed by that is conversion. The marketing funnel is what pretty much every customer, whether it's retail, B2B, services, anything, goes through to ultimately end up and choose your product or your services.
Yeah. So the idea is that because it's wide at the top, the leads are less refined. And, you know, what have you set to at the very top of your funnel, it's kind of up to you. You can say it's a customer that is your demographic that is completely unaware of your business. However, I think it's a little bit, I don't know, you can weigh in on this as well. I think it's more effective to see the top of the funnel as someone when they start to become aware of you. So like entering into that awareness stage is when they kind of enter the buy funnel. And for us, we consider a jewelry store that is within kind of our range of dollars. We're not looking for pawn shops, and we're not really looking for, like, you know, we're not trying to sign Jared right now. But to me, I see it as like someone who is could be using our services, and then they enter the funnel the second that they hear our name, and then all the rest of the resulting actions are the buy funnel. Is that kind of an accurate summation?
Yeah. The basic definition of the awareness stage is somebody learning who you are, or becoming aware, or knowing who you are. So a lot of the jewelry stores that I talk to at the trade shows, or when I'm doing my, you know, sales and marketing calls, the number one thing they struggle with is nobody in their area knows who they are. And they'll have customers coming in all the time saying, I've driven by you for 15 years. I literally didn't know you existed. The awareness stage of the marketing funnel is literally letting people know you exist. Not that you have the best products, you have the best service, you exist.
Yeah. And it's kind of like almost when you're sifting for gold. It's if you start and you try to sift everything using the most finest mesh grater, whatever the thing is called, you're going to have issues because you're going to be stuck with so much results. However, if you start with too much, too loose of a net, then you're going to get so much junk, and it's going to take you forever to get through it as well. And I kind of think of it as, you know, the usage could be, I'm just looking at an article about it right here that you had sent me earlier. So it's understanding your audience and tailoring your approach. So understanding your audience, to me, I think that that's something that a lot of jewelry stores underestimate. I think that they all think that everybody needs to have jewelry, and, you know, you're not wrong. But also, it's like, all you have to do is ask them, like, who normally buys your jewelry, and you're going to start 90% of the way there. It's like, oh, our shoppers are typically between the ages of, what, 27 to, 50. Mm-hmm. And they typically have this kind of household and this kind of free money and this kind of demographic with their, if they have kids or don't have kids. To me, I think that starting to identify who your most common customers are is the first step in discovering what your audience is. And I think that's kind of something people forget.
Yeah. Awareness is not everybody around you knowing who you are. It's knowing who, it's the ideal customer, like what you said, if you're targeting like 25 to 45 year olds or slightly older, it's all of them around you knowing that you exist. Now, ways we typically go about and find those people from like a digital marketing perspective could be things like a display campaign on Google Ads, because it's high impressions, very well targeted, but it's a very, very low conversion, very low sale. It's literally meant to just say, my name is out there and I know you're interested in buying jewelry.
Yeah. It's getting them in there and then having your name kind of in the mix. But I think that that's another part of it. So you have them in the mix. You have the target demographic in your funnel, but you also got some rocks in there, you know, some duds, some potatoes. Mm-hmm. And then it comes down to the next step, which I think is interesting. It's identifying and addressing weaknesses in the customer journey. And so one of those things is if you got a store and you have terrible parking, and you just have that example where you were explaining before, it's like, oh, I've driven by a million times. It's like, well, you know, what's going on? There's something wrong. Let's try to identify it. Here's one. Maybe your signage outside your store is whack and it needs to be better, or it needs to say the word jewelry somewhere, or maybe it's a million things like that, or maybe your site has terrible discoverability, because this is the funnel can pertain to online and in store and both with the omnichannel solution. You know, I think that it's when you start to see that problem and identify a problem, you can start to move towards the solution.
Mm-hmm. A lot of brick and mortar stores will tell me that, oh, we used to be on the main busy street, so they had high visibility. But I've also heard from others saying, hey, I'm on the main street, but I'm on the back of the building. Nobody knows I exist. That's a problem to solve.
Yeah. And or another one, we're having tons of construction on our street and normally we get tons of foot traffic. It's like, okay, and like the situation is suboptimal. It is not ideal. But what are you going to do? Just close up shop and just say, nah, I'm done. No, it's a problem that can be attacked and overcome. And it just requires a little bit of thought and process and ingenuity, and we'll get there. And finally, and the last one is contextualize your marketing results. This one's kind of a little bit more nebulous. What do you see when it comes to contextualizing the marketing results? Is that like creating reports and actually having actions that come out of it, or is it something else?
Contextualizing marketing can be a lot of different things. I mean, it could be what a potential customer sees in the ad that you put out there. Like, does it match who they view themselves, or can they put themselves like in that position of, oh, I'm getting engaged and I want that diamond ring or something. On the flip side, from like a reporting standpoint, it could be looking at the numbers and data and realizing we're targeting people who have no interest in us. So an example from a couple of years ago, we ran a campaign promoting Antwerp diamonds and, you know, booking your diamond ahead of time, going over to Antwerp, et cetera. But they wanted to target like high schoolers, college aides, et cetera, people who don't really have the Antwerp dollars that are meant for more like, I have two or three homes already, I'm looking for an upgrade, things like that. So that marketing campaign in some ways was already doomed to failure from the start because the message and the contextualization was completely missing the mark. If we had targeted towards like people looking to upgrade their diamond, there would have been a much higher return from that campaign.
Yeah. And again, it's, I just, you know, I'm still on this article. Here's a couple of examples of some points that are important in targeting who like your demographic is. And the way that you'll be able to deliver this information is when you start to run a couple of marketing campaigns and then refining your results. So it's based on the age, the sex, household size, income level, employment status, education level, social media usage, interests, and device usage. I don't really know about device usage, just kind of whatever. But the biggest ones is like, I think the income level is huge because like you said, you know, they were targeting people that were making, you said college students, they're making negative income. And then, right? And then you're, but they should be targeting something else. And that's going to kind of be determined by what the product is that you're going to sell. That seems very, all of this stuff seems like, oh, of course, but it's not as, self-explanatory as you'd expect because, you know, for example, say you run a campaign for Antwerp diamonds, those diamonds are rather expensive and they're on one end of the spectrum. Well, what if you're doing, for example, we did a couple of places have done these COVID relief bracelets back in the day. That's a hard word to say. So sorry. Early on. And they were fascinating because they were very cheap. And what they were doing is getting these customers in the door that were way outside of what their target demographic was normally. So when you think about it, then when you run these subsequent campaigns afterwards, then the starting sift that you're going with are the people who are interested in shopping or have shopped Antwerp diamonds before and these COVID relief bracelets. So it's the full spectrum. And then whatever you get when you shake it down is going to be maybe a slightly different one.
Yep. And that's why that is one of the downsides of the awareness part of the funnel at the very top. You're looking for a targeted person. You're looking for a large number of them. We could literally bring like a school bus full of people to the front door of your jewelry store, but maybe only two people can afford anything in that store and want to purchase from you. You know, two double whammies right there. So from a marketing perspective, we never care about sheer quantity. We're never going to try to say like, we want to bring 10,000 people to your website every single day. We don't care. We want the people who are most likely to be lower in the funnel to purchase and decide you're worth it.
Yeah. And here's an example. So he said the term lower in the funnel. So here's an example. The most valuable ad displays or valuable product displays at a grocery store or even at Michael's and stuff like that is right at the register because those people are right at the bottom of the funnel. And those people know that you're kind of like, you're about to buy. And those items are usually the lowest price point. Like what are they? Gum and candy bars and impulse decision buys like that and magazines and junk. And they know that you're going to buy something else. So they put it, you know, right there and they know what they're doing. And I think again, it's kind of part of knowing the mind of a shopper and knowing the user's journey for your store and kind of leveraging that information to, you know, take action and increase your own sales. Mm-hmm. So all of that to say, I kind of like when we start to explain how Punchmark uses this information because I think it's very tempting for us to like be smoke and mirrors and be like, oh, we're so good. We can do whatever we want. And it's not. We actually do all of our own marketing in-house. We do all of our own. I mean, we make this podcast and let's be real. This is a marketing tool. We just started creating our own publication. That's a marketing tool. We have our own sales team. So all of that to say, we follow this buy funnel metric or this marketing funnel metric. Stu, can you kind of give us an idea of how Punchmark is using a marketing funnel and how what the stages are of it?
So the biggest thing we do from an awareness perspective, top of the funnel, is the sponsorships and the tables and booths at the various shows we go to. High visibility, getting the name out there, getting the brand out there. But it doesn't always mean you know about Site Manager, you know about our different digital marketing services, you know about our pricing even, or even who owns the company. You just know that Punchmark exists and it's a technology company. We then move kind of a little farther down the funnel into the consideration stage. Hey, we are more e-commerce focused. That's our primary thing. We do have a CMS, we have a website, et cetera. We do digital marketing. We are very strong with things like Google Ads, Google Shopping, Facebook product carousels. And hey, here's a couple of things too. We have some integrations, et cetera. Now you start getting down to the conversion. That's typically when we, you know, get a lead from a booth at a show or if we hear a referral from somebody else and they're interested. Why are you different from somebody else? Why is it, you know, slightly better to work with you than somebody else? And what does your pricing look like? What am I going to get out of it? What's the value, et cetera? So anybody we talk to, any movement, any action we take in the jewelry industry, it is in service of, number one, obviously helping everybody in the jewelry space. We want to be valuable and help people. But also, we're a business. We want to have clients too. And we want people to know about us, know about our strengths, know about the different things that make us unique, and guide them towards, here's the ideal solution that we think can help you. And ultimately, here's, you know, the decision.
Yeah. Because you need to know what their problems are before you can offer them solutions. Because we could just be like, hey, we integrate with the Edge point of sale system. And they're like, we don't use that. And it's like, okay, well, suddenly we're just kind of falling on our face.
Yeah.
But all of those stages, we're not just doing, you know, making this podcast for our health or writing blog articles for our health. It's all kind of considered. For example, so Stu was mentioning we have these booths and we sponsor events and stuff like that. And those things are kind of pricey.
Oh, yeah.
We go to some of these expensive shows, you know, JCK in Las Vegas, those cost some dollars. But the whole point is getting your name out there and getting in front of more people and people who didn't find us online. And we're doing it in not only in person, but we also do it online. One of the ways that we do it is through this podcast. It's kind of funny. I mentioned it earlier in the episode. Some people don't even know that we're with Punchmark. I am a big fan of the idea of the business of free. Business of free. This podcast doesn't cost anything. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all these things that they don't cost a subscription, I don't think. And we put it out there because one, we do believe that the rising tide floats all the boats. And that's, hey, if we can show you how to set up an efficient marketing funnel, jewelry stores are doing well, independent retailer jewelry stores are doing well, then it means that the industry is doing well. Our clients are going to do well. We're going to do well. I'm happy with that. But also, I think that people are naturally more likely to trust something that is free and then it works and then they want to come back to it. And this isn't something nefarious. Like, I do actually believe the things that we're saying. And I do believe that we are making a difference with this podcast. But I think that a lot of it is just kind of just tossing a couple of a little bit of, you know, bait out there. Be like, hey, here's a couple of interesting things. And maybe we can kind of loop you in. And if you want to hear more about us, we'd be happy to talk to you, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And, you know, I've had the experience in person at the trade shows where people that I've never met, or even sometimes clients, you know, shout out to Vincent. He'll come up to me and say, hey, man, I listen to every single episode you've ever put out there. It's always really good. And I get a lot of value out of it. It's no secret that In the Loop is trying to generate new business for us, but it's also, we want to provide value too. It's a great marketing tool, and it's something that honestly a lot more jewelers should consider, whether or not it's like a full blown podcast, or are you doing Instagram stories? Are you doing live things? Are you doing reels? Getting out there to build that awareness and ultimately lead people to say, I like them, I trust them, I'm going to buy from them.
Yeah. And I think it's very difficult. One of the actions I find very difficult from a user experience perspective is taking things physical to online and then online to physical. I find that jump very difficult, at least right now. And so one of the things that we've kind of come up with as a solution is we do a lot of things that are digital to digital. So for example, we have this podcast and everything links back in the show notes to punchmark.com. And then we have additional content on there where we post blogs and blogs. So the blogs that we post are like marketing information and like stories and FAQs and stuff that Stu writes about new tools and stuff I write about, like basically written versions of some of my episodes, like breaking down the best and stuff like that. And what we do is we're going from a digital to a digital, and then they can sign up for a demo, which is again digital, and we're kind of taking everything away until the last step, which is a physical action, which is where they have to call us or we'll sometimes call them. And it's kind of like I find it hard. Like, imagine you had to go digital to come visit our store. It gets a little bit more difficult, and that's why I find some digital marketing efforts kind of work best when it goes to e-commerce, comboing with e-commerce. But I mean, that's not to say that you can't get digital marketing drive in-store traffic, right?
Right. So let's talk about the consideration phase of the marketing funnel real quick. And one of the ways that we've found success with a lot of jewelry stores, the consideration is typically, I know I want a product. I know you're an option to buy a piece of jewelry from, but are you the cheapest? Do you have the best turnaround, best shipping? Is it available? All those little things that make a difference, not just, you know, we have the best customer service or we're a family-owned business. We've been around for 100 years. Those are all great, but a customer is looking for a piece of jewelry. We've found things like Google Merchant Center or Facebook Shop where people can see, oh, you have all these bracelets, you have all these necklaces, here's the price ranges, here's the availability, the colors, the styles, to be a great place to put a lot of product, a lot of attention, to give people the option to say, hey, I'm gonna shop amongst a lot of different people, you might be the best.
Yeah, and again, that comparison is not a problem. Sometimes you can use comparison to your benefit. We do it all the time with pricing. You know, if you're play to your strengths, is pricing your strength? Well, then you should have pricing be your foremost feature. Is it quality? Well, then do quality comparisons and you can talk about that. Is it service? You know, set yourself up that way. There are key pillars of business that you can begin to target and kind of go after. For example, Punchmark, we like to consider ourselves experts in the space and thought leaders, which I hate that term a ton, but that's what this podcast is doing, is we're trying to set ourselves up as thought leaders and experts. So that's why all of our information and content is written in an authoritative, convincing voice instead of, I mean, there's a million other ways we could have done it, you know, casual or very, I don't know, just... loosey-goosey or just dry. That's a different term. And I don't super love dry. I mean, that's how our knowledge base is written. But I try to, you know, we're trying to be, you know, giving information, but also being authoritative so that you see us as an authority. I mean, that's kind of how we're positioning ourselves.
We have a voice. We have a level of authority and experience, things like that. You know, I wouldn't consider myself an expert, but, you know, I've done a lot of this stuff for a long period of time. And that applies to basically every jewelry store out there. I mean, if you've done like nothing but repairs for 30 years, you are an expert, whether or not you want to claim that or not, because, you know, the next repair, you might fudge something.
Definitely. But Stu, I think we're going to take a quick break, have a word from our sponsor. We got to keep the lights on, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about how you can identify the sections of the buy funnel in your own business, and then maybe kind of where there's some roadblocks for you. So stay with us. We'll be back in just 1 minute. This episode is brought to you in part by Illumix. Illumix is a new tool for jewelry stores, providing an immersive shopping experience so your customers can fully engage with your brand. With Illumix's platform, e-commerce leaders can create customized shopping experiences that have shown to boost conversions by 13% and decrease abandoned carts by 23%. And that's what you want. Don't wait. Brands like Mejuri, Kuyat, and Beaver Brooks are already using Illumix, so go to illumix.com/punchmark and claim a free account. Again, that's Illumix, illumix.com/punchmark and claim a free account. Thanks, and back to the show. And we're back. Stu, what if we bought, we were just talking about legacy, just in the break, we're just talking about legacy marketing and like billboards. And I think billboards are hilarious because I literally cannot tell you a single billboard I've ever seen in my life. But I was like, wouldn't it be funny if we just bought an In the Loop billboard and just see if there was any market approach? But we'd be throwing $1,000 down the drain, but it would be kind of funny, right?
Yep. It would be a fun test.
Yeah, we get like a billboard. Yeah, right. We're about to have the Punchmark client workshop in like 2 weeks. And I think it'd be really funny if we got a billboard you could see from the cocktail hour on the first night. And we're like, you guys see that down there? You see it? That's us. And that'd be really funny. But it wouldn't really drive any traffic, but people would be like, wow, you really spent that money, didn't you?
It would be an accomplishment. It'd be a great photo op.
Yeah, that's all you're getting with it. But, my thoughts about legacy marketing aside, we were kind of gearing this to also talk about, you know, jewelry stores especially and how they can see the marketing funnel. And one of the things is that I think that people always kind of are focusing on the conversion aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes also believe that especially jewelry websites, that's what we do, are a little bit too focusing on the conversion, because they do believe that a lot of the shoppers are in that stage. But correct me if I'm wrong, I think you can have people on your website that are not on the conversion stage. They are potentially on either awareness or consideration. Is that correct?
Completely correct. I talk to jewelry stores who tell me that like 8 or 9 of the 10 people who walk into the store, they end up buying things. The opposite is true on your website. Maybe 10%, 20% or less will buy something. Everybody else is kind of price shopping, looking around, or bored out of their mind just to see what's cool out there.
Yeah. And that's, I think, the real true value of those weirder landing pages. We've done episodes in the past about landing pages, but one of the things that we've talked about are like the landing pages that are on, they use the term soft categories. I don't think that this is a real term, but I start saying it enough, I'm hoping it catches on. Hard categories are about like, what the product is. So earrings and diamond jewelry and gold jewelry. So there's that. But then there's these soft categories, which are, I think, more about just setting up the hook, mm-hmm. which is like, you know, shop jewelry that's, you know, under this price, or jewelry for like
birthdays,
Independence Day, and jewelry for Valentine's Day, and jewelry that's trending. You know, let's be real, you can say anything is trending if you wanted to, but I think that that's the value of the landing pages. How are you guys hooking these shoppers and trying to get them if they're not yet in the conversion phase of things?
We try to find the people who are a little farther down the funnel, not full conversion, but consideration. So if we know that they're in market, they're price shopping and things, and there's a specific type of jewelry they're looking for, try to bring them in through like a Google ad campaign or a Facebook ad campaign and send them to that soft landing page or like a hard landing page to convert them. Like, hey, here's all the products that are very similar, or here's a theme, you know, here's the April birthday appropriate jewelry, here's the upcoming Easter, that kind of stuff. So people who are looking can say, oh, there's a lot more out there that I'm thinking about. I kind of like a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. You know, it's not going to be 100% effective. I think we should kind of throw that out there. This is not a silver bullet where you're just going to take your conversion rates from 1% up to 50%, because it's just unrealistic. But all of these little considerations are going to be, first of all, unique to your store. And the other part of it is you're going to be fighting over incremental increases. So like even if it's just a 0.1 of a percentage, that kind of stuff is the step towards getting things, you know, completely figured out or just improved. And I think a lot of times people kind of sort of see e-commerce as like, oh, I'm not even doing e-commerce. I'm going to start doing it and I'm making more sales. And it's like, yes, but it takes incremental steps. Otherwise you're going to be, you know, starting at the starting line after you just kind of used up all your gas in one go. You know, that's kind of how I see it.
Yeah. Do you know what the like global average for e-commerce transactions is?
For conversion rate? Oh man, I don't know. I would guess, I'm guessing 15%.
Oh no, much, much lower.
Oh, maybe 8%?
Much lower.
Oh my gosh, what is it?
So the global average for e-commerce transactions, and this is maybe a year or two old data in my head, it's around 1.5%.
1.5. Wow. So that means you have to have 100 people come to your store and maybe one of them is going to buy, maybe two. That's, I guess that goes to show, you know, I think you just got to have the right type of people go in.
Yep, exactly. Things like, you know, organic search is great for trying to bring people in through multiple channels and things, but you're getting a lot of riffraff. You're not really getting people in market. It could be anybody, but if you had like 100 people who like have their wallet out, 1.5, maybe 2%. 2% would be amazing. Two of those 100 will purchase from you.
Yeah. You know, even with us, we're not even selling our websites through e-commerce, which I don't know if that's hypocritical of us or not. I don't think it is. I don't think anybody wants to buy a website through e-commerce. They do need a little story.
Add a cart.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think it really works that way. But one thing that's really interesting is we do probably see something around that when it comes to leads into conversions from our sales team. I mean, we're always kind of refining who our leads and prospect lists are. But then when it comes to actually executing on them, yeah, it's probably right around there. And it's, you know, our sales team is killer. And that's, I mean, I don't think you can expect anything much higher than that, you know?
Yep. It's every industry. It's been that way for decades. These are just the realities of things we deal with. And the rewards, though, at the end of the funnel are still worth going for to do all this stuff in.
Yeah. So I guess one thing I kind of want to talk about, I like actionable advice at the end of these episodes. And one thing I kind of want to talk about is maybe we can break down those, you know, it's awareness, consideration, conversion. And we didn't really talk a ton about loyalty, because that is, if you have to consider that that's actually a decent problem to have is, you know, hey, I want to increase our loyalty rewards program. Well, you got to start making sales in the first place, and then we can talk about it. But those first three, maybe we can talk about what are like some common roadblocks, or like what are some roadblocks that they might be seeing and some ways that they can attack it. So the first might be awareness. Is this like, hey, it's going to be SEO and SEM all day, or is there more nuance to that?
It can be anything that gets your name out there to a wide variety of people. So the lowest hanging fruit, you know, have a Google business profile, have a website, make certain the website says where your store is located, the specific town, even mention which categories, you know, all that stuff. Yeah.
And then, so I think awareness is also one of those things. You can never have enough of it.
One additional one I would do for awareness, if you wanted to get a little bit away from the organic side into the paid side, find a channel, find a platform that allows you to reach a large audience at the lowest cost per view available. So we see things like, you know, 2 cents a view on a YouTube ad, and a YouTube ad can hit, you know, hundreds of thousands of people around you. Things like that, where it's like, you're getting in front of not only the people you want to target, but in an effective way too, kind of like you used to do with like a billboard or you took a newspaper ad out.
Yeah. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that's kind of what we've always seen as the problem with Pinterest is that, you know, you see when you comparison shop it, you know, you got 2 cents in a view on, an impression on YouTube. And then you're looking at like, 20 cents an impression on Pinterest. And when it comes down to numbers, it's like maybe the qualified leads are better from Pinterest, but it's hard to rationalize a 10x increase in cost per impression. Is that right?
Yep. Especially with low budgets. Yep.
Yeah. You pretty much got to have, you got to have some dollars if you're going to play Pinterest. But all right, let's talk about consideration. This one to me is about like the comparison shopping and making sure that the information is displayed interestingly, cleanly, you know, dynamically. What are some like kind of roadblocks you see people having and how do you get over that?
Outdated pricing. So if there's two stores side by side and one of them has a $5 more markup, why would I buy from them? Keeping an eye on pricing, making certain that, you know, the styles, the categories, the products that people that are actually looking for that are in demand. There's all these like little kind of like roadblocks that like, why would I go to the corner gas station that, you know, costs 10 cents more when I can go across the street for 10 cents less?
Yeah. I mean, and that's over gas, you know, and it's, that's like something you're going to burn up in the next hour, as opposed to something that's like a lifetime buy. And I think the biggest thing to me is not just doing the minimum, for example, with, product, images. I think that product images is something that people sleep on. Still, we've been doing this episode. I feel like I've said this so many times, but one of the biggest things is, maybe don't just have one image of the product. If it's going for, here's your rule of thumb. If it's going for over $400, you need to have at least 4 images of it. I think that that's a very fair benchmark. If you're doing 1,000, maybe consider having a video with it.
I did an audit for a prospect recently of their website, and their engagement ring page had 36 products on it, just round number, basically. And each of those 36 products had one photo, and they were all called engagement ring.
Hmm. And it's just like, would you drop a couple G's on something that only has one product image? I'm like, dude, I want product images out the wazoo when I'm buying like a sticker online, man. Like, that's for $5 as opposed to a few thousand. I think that people are really underselling that. And the other one, I think I want all the specs on the jewelry. Jewelry is a very detail oriented thing. And the other thing is like, I can't tell the difference. I don't know the difference between, 10K versus 24 karat gold. And I kind of want you to tell me what I need to know. So when it comes to, you know, a pave setting, I want you to tell me what like all the details with the diamonds are. And if you are only just saying hey, it's a pave setting and this is the price, I'm like, I don't know. I don't really trust that.
And the key difference that could be the consideration factor between, you know, you and versus somebody else is if you put all that information online versus require us to go into the store, pick up the phone, or talk to you for that information, because we don't want to talk to you. We want to know all of that ahead of time, empowering us to make the best decision.
Yeah. Again, think about what I was talking about with going digital to digital. Like if it's a digital, you know, shopping experience, I don't really want to do something physical afterwards, unless that's what I'm predisposed to. And I had that in my mind already. A lot of the times it's like, just give them the option to buy it through the channel that they're already on. And that's kind of, you know, and what are you hurting if you're going to have that detail out there? You need to have it. The last step is conversion. And conversion is definitely, you know, a harder one because I think that some jewelers sometimes think that their conversion rate online should be what it is in the store. And we've already talked about this in this episode about how that's kind of an unachievable dream when it comes to that. But sometimes we see these stores that are really struggling to get their first conversion. They're just getting the first sale. I mean, besides having your e-commerce gateways turned on and besides making sure that you can accept them, is there something that is usually stopping someone from making that first sale? Or is it just waiting for the right amount of traffic?
Sometimes it could be you haven't done a lot of marketing up to that point. So if somebody hasn't actually gone through the journey and they've just kind of stepped into conversion, you know, it's a tough sale. Like, I've never bought jewelry online before, or I haven't looked around, I haven't price shopped, etc. There's things you can do to like encourage people online, you know, offer free shipping, make it very easy to create an account, make it, you know, very mobile, fast, friendly website. So somebody who's shopping can just easily purchase and make that online sale. There could be as many other reasons why they don't do it right away, because pricing, comfort, you know, affordability, deliverability, any of those things. The conversion step of the funnel is where a lot of people, especially people who have a very small budget and want to, you know, common sense, maximize their return. Dollar in, I expect $2, $3, $5 out. Let's just only target the people at the very lowest end. That's when somebody who's like, hey, I just got engaged, or I'm looking to get engaged and I need to, you know, buy my engagement ring. I'm going to look online. I'm going to find somebody close to me. That's going to be a highly competitive search if it's an ad. So you're talking $20, $25, $50 a click. You get them to the website, you want to get them to an appointment. And then it's the same kind of like process and journey that you would go through in store of like, what's your budget? What kind of cut, you know, clarity, all that stuff you're looking for. How can I make you comfortable? How can I let you know that you can afford this? You can pay this on your terms. All of those kind of like end customer questions that they always have.
Yeah, man, really a lot of things to consider. And again, this is like a complex algorithm, man. This takes a lot of time. I just had this idea, and honestly, I'm going to throw this analogy out there in the last 1 minute of this episode. Just bear with me. This is kind of what it's like opening up your website and expecting some conversion. To me, it's like in the web, the internet is so massive and it has almost no wayfinding, with the exception of Google and Bing, if you use that. It's kind of like opening up the store in, you ever watch the movie Frozen?
Oh yeah.
The guy who sells, the snowshoes and the shovels and stuff like that. Hello, big summer blowout. You know, that one. Well, that is kind of like what your business is. You're setting up a business online. You're setting up your business in the middle of this deep, dark forest with hardly any wayfinding. And it's about how are you going to attract some traffic there? Because if you just say you have great details, you have great products, you're that guy, and you have, you know, a big summer blowout, but no one knows that there's there, and you only see one customer a day because they're the traveler through the woods, well, you're never going to have the results that you want if your expectations are to sell to 10 people. So then it's like, okay, maybe what can we do to increase the amount of sales? Well, maybe it's about increasing the wayfinding. You know, maybe that's the SEO kind of aspect. So maybe you put up some signs, you know, every 50 feet, 100 feet in the forest that says, you know, hello, big summer blowout, and it points towards your store. Okay, maybe it's, you know, you want to get people that are on foot or on bicycle or on skis or whatever. Man, this is going deep. It's also maybe you need to give some thought to that and make it accommodating for people on that. So maybe that's why your website needs to be available on mobile or on tablet or on desktop, because you need to be accommodating for all those people. Because otherwise, the people that are on, you know, bikes, if they can't get there via bike path, they're just not going to go to your store. That's kind of like a really long allegory for what your website online is, and starting to think critically about your website using this marketing funnel is kind of one way to start getting some more traffic to your big summer blowout.
Yep. In an ideal world, every jewelry store would have campaigns running on different channels for the awareness stage, the consideration stage, the conversion stage. They would be measuring each of those separately, looking at how basically top of the funnel translates down to mid to bottom, and optimizing for that. I know a lot of jewelry stores, especially ones that are listening to us right now, might have slightly more limited budgets, or they need to do more seasonal event kind of driven marketing. I would highly encourage them, focus on the top of the funnel, let as many people know about you as possible, and especially what you got going on kind of thing. But then when the people who are ready to make a purchase, they're just looking for somebody to repair their jewelry, or they want to book a consultation for like an engagement ring or something like that, have a campaign running, an evergreen campaign that's always running to bring them in, convert them. So you can say, hey, good to see you. I heard you saw our ad on Google. Let's talk about your upcoming engagement, your upcoming wedding. We want to discuss and find the perfect piece of jewelry for you.
Yep. And then it just causes that flywheel, you know, that loyalty back to if they're loyal, they already have the awareness and they usually skip to the consideration and then the conversion and back again. And that's, I think, the value of like those repairs. People poo-poo on repairs all the time because the markup on them isn't that great. But I do really think it instills that loyalty. But man, I love that metaphor I came up with. You know what? I think that was a good one. I felt good about that. So everybody,
run with it.
Yeah, right. I'm going to start using that. I appreciate you all listening. Stu, I appreciate your time. We'll be back with another episode on Tuesday. And just in looking, I think that next week we're going to be talking about the Vendor Vault, our zine. And I have a Savannah on, which is going to be really cool. And then we have a couple of really exciting guests coming up. So I hope you guys are ready to tune in. It's going to be a good one. I appreciate you all listening. Be back next week, Tuesday, with another episode. Bye. All right, everybody. That's the end of the episode. Hope you enjoyed it. This episode was brought to you by Punchmark and produced and hosted by Michael Burpo. Our guest was Stuart Blessman, the digital marketing director at Punchmark. And this episode was edited by Paul Suarez with music by Ross Cochran. Don't forget to rate the podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and leave feedback at punchmark.com/loop. That's L-O-U-P-E. We'll have another episode for you next week, Tuesday. Hope you enjoy. Bye.